This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Remember this time last year when we were all like, oh my God, I can't wait for 2021. Everything's going to be so much better then. How's that working out for you? While the world is still an absolute mess, there is some solace to be taken in the fact that we continue to have great music to listen to, even as society seemingly collapses around us. So as we bid another grueling year goodbye, the Great Pop Culture Debate wants to look back and share what we think is some of the best new music of 2021. That isn't COVID weight I put on. I'm just serving up my personal deluxe edition. Wait until you hear my bonus tracks. They're filthy. I'm your host, Eric Resniak. Please help me welcome our amazing panel. She's had her driver's license for a while now, but still enjoys good car ride. It's Andrea Guerrero.
Eric, are you with that blonde girl right now?
Oh, Andrea, I am that blonde girl. Miss Rona ain't keeping her down. She is back again. It's Gary Jackson.
Oh, snap. We are here, baby. Hi, everyone.
We are here. My skin is clear, and this is not an ad for Proactive. Welcome back, Gary.
Hey.
It's time to let the children know what time it is. Please welcome back the fabulous Jake Pitticelli.
Oh, honey, I've been there, done that, worn that dress, so you know mama knows it best.
And I saw that dress and you were cinched for the gods. So congrats. We're so glad to have you back, Jake. And finally, we are so excited to welcome a special guest star to the panel. He's a radio host, podcast guest, and professional pain in the ass. It's Zach from, well, a plethora of podcasts.
Wow, Eric, you summed up my entire life in a single sentence. I don't know if I should be impressed or just disappointed in myself.
I say both. Why choose?
But all right.
Seriously, we are...
Have it all.
Exactly, have it all. We are so pleased to have you. For those who don't know Zach, he is a radio program director and has been in this industry for more than two decades. You've worked in a variety of music genres. Zach, where can people find you and listen to more of you?
The best place to follow me is actually through Twitter. I'm under Zach Deuce. That's just my on-air persona, I guess. And that's the easiest way to find whatever podcast I'm a part of. And I consistently try to promote other indie podcasts. So come find me or I'll find you. That's a threat.
It's a threat and a promise. And that's how we came to know Zach. He's been an amazing champion of the Great Pop Culture Debate, our little show. So thank you so much, seriously, Zach, for everything. And we're so thrilled to have you on board.
Thank you.
So our best of episodes are a little different than our usual format. There's no polls, no brackets. There's barely even any debating. Our panelists are just going to do a pop culture show and tell on our individual top three albums of the year. Do you disagree with some of our picks? Do you want to add your favorites to the discussion? Head to greatpopculturedebate.com and leave a comment on this episode or find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or Facebook and tell us what you think. With that out of the way, let's get to these top threes. I'm going to start in alphabetical order, and that means, Andrea, you're up first. Please tell the folks what type of music generally you gravitate towards so they have a sense of kind of where you're coming from.
Thanks, Eric. I listen to a little bit of everything. I know that's the cop-out answer that everyone gives, but literally I'm looking at my top artists for 2021, and in order it was Kanye West, My Chemical Romance, The Smashing Pumpkins, The Mountain Goats, and Meet Me at the Altar. And I know my top 100 songs, there were like some musical tracks in there. There was like Cardi B in there, the Lizzo single from this year. So literally a little bit of everything. So I definitely approach music as if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. I try not to judge anyone based off of their music taste, including myself. That being said, the first album I wanted to talk about was Happier Than Ever by Billie Eilish. First of all, I love this journey for Billie. I love that she was like this gothy, sad teen. And then she came out at the Met Gala this last year in like this old Hollywood glam, beautiful dress. And is just amazing. Like I was like speechless. She's just gorgeous and so talented and so uniquely smart. And she seems really down to earth. Like she's aware that she's a pop star, but kind of like owns it. And as we know about Billie Eilish, like, it was seemingly overnight, she kind of became the most well-known teen in the U.S., possibly the world, and was just under constant scrutiny about her music, her body, her choices, and her freshman album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go, was very much about her struggles with depression and self-harm and just being 16, 17, however old she was. And then she came out with Happier Than Ever this last year. And it feels like not a full 180, but like a 140. The whole album is constructed in a way that makes it interesting and engaging to listen to from top to bottom. So compared to When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? This album just really feels like a big fuck you, I won't do what you tell me to the industry and media. She opens with the track Getting Older, where she spotlights her Take a Drink iconic, hushed, whispery tones and laments about the tribulations of being a famous pop star. She sings Things I Once Enjoyed, Just Keep Me Employed Now, rings through the chorus, and the opening track ends with her setting the stage for the rest of the album, where she sings But Next Week, I Hope I'm Somewhere Laughing. For anybody asking, I promise I'll be fine. I've had some trauma, did some things I didn't wanna, was too afraid to tell you, but now I think it's time. And then it immediately cuts to the next track with a dog growling and her taking a deep breath and saying, okay. And it's like she's like prepping herself for just, you know, unleashing to the world everything that she's been through in the past few years. And the lyrics for this tune are vicious, but the track itself is not. So some of the lyrics include things like, don't take it out on me, I've got no sympathy, which we've all been to the point where like, I don't care anymore. But the track feels like a groovy, sort of like a body roll of a walk down the street. It's really interesting juxtaposition. And then halfway through the album, she has a spoken word interlude called Not My Responsibility that she was playing at her, I think she did like 3 concerts before COVID hit. And that song holds back 0 punches. As we know, Billie's very famous for wearing big oversized clothes very intentionally so that people couldn't comment on her body. But then obviously people found a way to do that and did so even more when she was photographed just seen wearing regular clothes, jeans and a tank top. So she questions, do my shoulders provoke you? Does my chest and my stomach, my hips, the body I was born with, is it not what you wanted? Which in the era of Me Too and this feminist rights movement that we've got going on and just generally a civil rights movement that we're all living through is just such a poignant thing for this 18, I think she's 18 when she wrote this, she's 19 now, thing to say that even someone that young has to go through all of this is just sort of heartbreaking. Ultimately, the monologue ends with, or is your opinion of me not my responsibility? Which is just a mic drop of a line to like end the song and lead into the second half of the album. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No. I was just going to say, just on that particular front, I find her so politically fascinating. Mm-hmm. To be so young. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe she is now repping one of the big design houses, but said, yeah, I'll do that. But you have to promise me that you will no longer use fur. Is that correct?
Oscar De La Renta. Yep.
That is amazing for an 18-year-old woman to be like, I have incredible agency and like pop culture power right now, and I'm going to go ahead and use this. At 18, I didn't know how to use like Zit cream. Like, it's amazing to me what these, seriously, I'm not even joking. Like what these young people. Exactly. Thank you. Well, now I know, Jake. No, seriously, I am so in awe of these young artists owning their power and not taking shit. It bowls me over. congrats. Anyway, please go ahead, Andrea.
Oh, no, I was just going to talk about her title track, Happier Than Ever. It starts with her angelic vocals, and it's over like this soft guitar singing, "When I'm away from you, I'm happier than ever," which, again, we've all been there, done that. And then halfway through the track, the tempo changes and the guitar turns electric, and she builds into this moment when she's singing about the exhaustion of having to deal with this person's antics, and ultimately peaks with, "I don't relate to you, because I'd never treat me this shitty. You make me hate this city." And then like the distorted guitars kick in for the second half. And then she just ends the song screaming, "Just fucking leave me alone," which it feels so cathartic for both the relatability on our end and in defense of Billy after she's been through everything that she's been through. She just wants to be left alone by her ex, by the media, by everyone. Ultimately, this album, I think, is just a great follow-up to her freshman album, and it really shows how much she's matured and grown just as a person, and her owning her popularity and her fame in a way that I don't think we've seen a lot of people do in this day and age. You know, we've had a lot of like down-to-earth artists and famous people, but I think she's just doing it in a completely different way that I think is really inspiring to teens today.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. I think she is going to be so interesting to watch.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, to develop as an artist. That to me, like, that gives me hope for the future. Not to be all corny, but seriously. And part of that is me being a Gen Xer being like, "Hello, children younger than I am. It's your job to fix the world because we're not capable of doing it."
Because we fucked it up.
Well, technically the people before us fucked it up, but we're a bunch of slackers and we don't, like, I'm sorry, I don't know, like, I can't function. But you're great. So go for it. Go for it. Did anybody else have anything they wanted to chime in about Miss Eilish?
I just agree with Andrea. What I love is that she is using her platform for good. Like going back to what you said about the fur and the company that she's like branding, ambassadoring for. I think that's so powerful. And that's the way to do it. And I love that she's so unapologetic about it now. Like it really is motivating. Yeah. And I do hope that other artists her age and younger will take note and use their platform for good in this way as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything Andrea said. That was a really great summary. I also love the album. And I think what makes Billy so successful is that she's really this anti-pop star. And I think that's what people really relate to, being the other. And she really represents our generation extremely well. She's very well spoken. She is not afraid to shy away from politics. She performed at the DNC. And then she, you know, led the Met Gala, as we were talking about earlier, with Naomi Osaka and Timothée Chalamet. So again, I just cannot wait to see, you know, how her career expands even more. Just if this is with the level she's at with her sophomore album, you know, the best is still yet to come for her. And she's such a young artist.
Agree. Zach, did you have anything you wanted to say or?
I don't know that much about Billie Eilish because it's more outside of my area of music, not with just work, but just what I listen to. But from what I've heard, I am intrigued and respect her as an artist. And I love the fact that she is not conforming to what people think that she should be as an artist, that she is taking what she wants and doing what she wants, where so many artists so many times are directed by their label of, this is what you have to do and you have to present yourself this way. And she's not doing that. And that, I think, is a key component, as you've touched on, that she is able to use this and be an inspiration to a much younger generation than us.
Yeah, agreed completely. So thank you, Andrea. You did an amazing job with that. Frankly, I'm over here being like, my notes are not nearly as good as Andrea's. I'm going completely flaw.
And I was like frantically jotting down notes this morning. So,
well, you killed it, madam. So thank you very much. I'm up next. So for my first album of the year, it's a little bit of a cheat. I will acknowledge that. It is What's Your Pleasure, the Platinum Pleasure Edition by Jessie Ware. What's Your Pleasure, the album originally came out in 2020, but this is the deluxe edition with a bunch of new songs. And the whole thing is just fabulous. I said when I nominated this for our Culture Club, which for those of you who are not following us on Twitter @culture_debate, you are missing out on Culture Club, where every Saturday, our panelists and our Patreon supporters share the various things in pop culture that they're obsessed with that week. So Jessie had dropped a new song on there, and I put it up and said that if you're gay and you're not listening to Jessie Ware, you are not doing homosexual sexual correctly. And I stand by that. Jesse is just effortlessly cool. While a great number of pop stars put on an affectation to appear disaffected, there's none of that here. She just embodies this vibe that she's giving off, and it's so authentic to me. And what that vibe is it's modern electro disco. And by the way, I screwed up the assignment. I didn't say what my kind of particular approach to music is. I love pop. I love electro pop. I love dance pop. I love modern disco. And that is Jessie Ware, basically a circle Venn diagram. That's who she is. She is the queen of this type of music, and I don't think she actually is that well known yet. I think she maybe is more known overseas than she is known here. But if you haven't listened to her and any of those genres interest you, I urge you to listen to this album. From the swirling strings of Spotlight to the seductive What's Your Pleasure to the funky bass line of Ooh La La to the unbelievably catchy hooks in Soul Control, this album is going to get your ass shaking. And that even includes me. Now Jake can attest to this. We performed together. Jake, I have no rhythm. Can you back that up?
I mean, I won't say that you do have rhythm.
That's fair. So take that for what it is. Like, I can't dance. I can't move. I just jerk arrhythmically. But this album, when I put it on and I'm cooking my dinner at night, it's like the soul of Halston comes down into my body and my kitchen is Studio 54. It's just so good. Every song on it is amazing. And if you have not listened to it, I strongly urge you to. Has anybody else listened to Jessie Ware on this podcast?
Negative.
No.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. If you have not, please do check it out. It's a fabulous album, and you will not regret it. I'll just say that. So moving on, Gary, you're going to, and I'm going to get this. Is it actually pronounced Hotels?
It is pronounced Hotels.
Okay. So before you talk about Hotels, tell the people what kind of music you generally listen to, and then the floor is yours.
So I was thinking about this, and I think the older I'm getting, the more I just naturally have started gravitating to R&B and just like soul music, like storytelling. And so, yeah, the album, my first album that deserves all the praise is Hotels by Jasmine Sullivan. And the reason that is I think people sleep on Jasmine. And I, like, for years, I don't think that she's gotten her flowers until now. And it makes me so happy to see this album and the success of this album for her. So if you do know a little bit about Jessie or you don't, she kind of came out with Bust Your Windows Out Your Car. And so she just gone from like revenge, you know, pop music to dealing with image with her song like Mascara and Mona Lisa into this album, which to me is just about like reclaiming yourself, basically, is how I would describe the album. If no one's caught her NPR Tiny Desk live performance, and I emphasize live, she has the vocals, it is incredible. And she was awarded NPR's Album of the Year. And that says a lot. Like, I think it's so great just to see her getting the success on a larger scale outside like just the R&B circle of music listeners. The album itself also is universally acclaimed now. And what I love is that it just weaves stories of like womanhood, sex, betrayal, and ownership of self throughout the album. Each song on the album has like an interlude, like intermission of like spoken word in between them. And it's just beautiful just to hear these stories of how women, one, use their bodies to get what they want, but like empower to do so. How women feel like sometimes they have to use their bodies to even be seen. And so it's just it's like this juxtaposition of womanhood and obviously not being a woman. It is a great insight to see what women go through on a day-to-day basis, especially women of color. It makes it more empowering to me. But when I like what I, another thing I love about this album, why is it's just the best album, is that this is an album that you actually listen to from start to finish. You don't jump in between from track 1 to track 8. It is every track has an impact on the next song. And it just, you can just close your eyes and just listen to the whole thing. And it is a beautiful, beautiful story that Jasmine and these other artists have weaved together. And if no one's known this, she won the album of the year so far at the BET Awards, the Soul Train Award. She won album of the year, and she's up for the R&B album of the year at the Grammys, this upcoming Grammys. And I hope she wins, and I hope she gets her flowers. And she debuted at number 4 on the Billboard 200. So give it up to my girl Jasmine Sullivan for finally getting her flowers and her album Hotels.
Yeah, I have to tell you, Gary, I listened to this album because you nominated it, and I loved it. It is so good.
Yes.
And you nailed on the head, where you're like, you do not skip songs on this album. You do not put it on shuffle. It is a story. And all of those, there's been interludes in albums forever, right? People do the spoken word stuff, but these are so effective.
Yes.
It's these real women telling their real stories, and like, you know, it's 2021. You've seen all kinds of stories on TV, movies, etc. But these are really riveting and very powerful. And I was just blown away by not only that, because it's a brilliant idea for a framework for an album, but also just the songs. Her voice is incredible. The songs are beautiful.
Yes.
Everything about it is just so well delivered. So thank you for nominating it. It's fabulous. And I'm so glad we're talking about it. Does anybody else listen to this one yet? Jake, have you given a spin?
I have not, but I will after this podcast.
That's the goal. And Andrea and Zach, if you have listened and you want to chime in, feel free. If you haven't, that's totally fine.
I haven't listened, but I love an amazing Tiny Desk. And so that's definitely going to be on my list now to go check out.
Please check it out.
Perfect. Zach, anything from you?
I'm very interested because it is difficult to take an album and actually tell a story with it. So many bands have attempted that, and some do a magnificent job of actually telling a story, and other ones can completely mess it up. And sometimes you don't even know you're listening to a story through the album, and that's my favorite ones. So I'm going to be listening to this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Gary. Jake, you're up next. What you got for me?
Oh, Eric, I am so excited to talk about this next album. But before that, I will say that the music that I do generally listen to is very pop heavy and usually bright, happy pop, or as I like to think of it as poptimism. Although I don't really know exactly what my top genre is, because I'm an Apple Music listener and not a Spotify whore.
Oh, you're the one. Oh, my God.
I'm the worst. I know. I think like my top listen to song is like I'm Speaking by Kamala Harris. I don't know. I don't have to, maybe once Apple Music has an algorithm, I'll find it out. But until then, that's the kind of the music that I listen to. And that is a good segue into the album that one of the best albums of the year, if not my favorite, Montero by Lil Nas X. And what I love about him is he's just not a singer, a rapper, a social media sensation. He is just a icon and somebody who's gained that status in such a short amount of time, you know, following up from his critically acclaimed Old Town Road, which is the longest running number one song on the Billboard charts. He also gained 2 Grammys from that. So he had a big shoes to fill, or rather big heels to fill in this next album. And he didn't just beat the sophomore slump, he obliterated it. His first single from the album, Montero, as we all know, is just an epic song, such a banger. It really is just a queer anthem that I am sure will be played in gay clubs for the entirety of my life. And that is something that I look forward to. I think that not only his lead single, the singles that he released, but his promotion that he did, you know, as we all know from the Uber Eats commercial that's on all the time with Elton John, you don't look broke.
They kill me. They slay me. Those commercials are hilarious.
They are insane. They are so good. And he also does feature Elton John on his album. So I love seeing that collaboration between, you know, these two queer music icons. I think that's really amazing. He also did the Satanic Shoes, where he had actual blood in them. with a Nike. And, you know, I just think he's looking to get attention in any, you know, he is not afraid to be an attention whore. And I love that about him because I am the same way.
What is more 2021 than being an attention whore? I'm sorry.
I really can't think of anything else. Maybe like a booster shot.
Yes.
He also did a stint on Maury. And let's not forget, when he released this album, he was pregnant with it. He gave birth to Montero. Do we all remember that when he was pregnant?
Yes.
But what I love is that he is such a philanthropist as well. He created a baby registry to gather donations for various LGBT charities for each song that was released. And so not only did he do something, you know, charitable with his, you know, I love an artist that isn't just makes it more than just about their music and the work, but something, a greater cause. And I think because Lil Nas X knows that he is, you know, speaking to this generation of queer kids, you know, he's really using his platform to promote that. And I think that's amazing. I think this album is bold. It's heartfelt. It's really, you know, it talks about his journey of coming out and, you know, even one of the records, The Art of Realization, the art of, you know, it's of him realizing who he is, what his power is, kind of while we were alluding to Billie Eilish. And, you know, also similar to Billie Eilish, when he was at the Met Gala, he did 3 reveals on the carpet and it was everything that I could have ever asked for. I mean, Lady Gaga's over here being like, huh, who's done that before? But it was still amazing. And his collaborations on his album with Miley Cyrus, Elton John, Doja Cat, Megan Thee Stallion. I mean, come on. He just kept bringing it. I mean, just when I thought, you know, I couldn't like this album more, I listened to it again. And I like it even better. And that's what I want. No pun.
That's what I want. Yeah, no, seriously. Go ahead. Sorry, Jake.
No, and his live performances that came along with all of his recordings and his music videos. I mean, sliding down a stripper pole to give Satan a lap dance and then getting fucked in a locker room shower from That's What I Want. I mean, that is the content that I need in my life to get me through this pandemic.
Oh, God, I miss my 20s. No, but in all seriousness, yeah, I have to tell you, Jake, I will admit this. When Old Town Road came out, I was like, this is charming, but this is going to be a one-hit wonder situation. There's no way this has any type of legs. I'm just completely honest here.
Big same.
Obviously, I was wrong, and I've never been more delighted to be incorrect in my life, because every single thing he did for this album, my response every time was, he is killing it. It is perfect. Everything about this, from the delivery to his clapbacks on social media to his tie-ins with product endorsements, like, he's just doing such a good job of this that I'm in awe of him. All of that aside, though, the music is amazing. Like, Industry Baby is a great song. That's What I Want is a great song. Like, he's just we talked a little bit about how Billie Eilish is so inspiring. For me personally, like, I can't even imagine the power that in not just openly gay black man, but an aggressively gay black man must have to other young queer people of color in this world. Like, what a mind-blowing thing. 20 years ago, I never would have imagined this. So I think Lil Nas X to me is like the celebrity of 2021, but that's just my opinion. And I'm going to pass it over. Anybody else have anything you want to say about this?
I agree. This album just warms my heart as a fellow little gay black boy. It really brings so much joy that he is so unapologetically himself. And we need this. This is like black boy joy on every level. And I wish him nothing but success, and I cannot wait to see what this album will do at the Grammys.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's nominated for Album of the Year and Record of the Year for Call Me By Your Name. So I hope he wins them both.
Zach, anything from you?
He's a marketing genius.
Yeah.
Everything he has done has just continued to send his name into the stratosphere. Whether you're a fan of his music or not, I heard about him partially because I'm in the industry. But I mean, when he started doing the whole promotion with the shoes and the blood that was going to be in them, it was all marketing and promoting his name. The music videos, again, so many people upset about him sliding down a stripper pole to take on the devil. I mean, hey, he was doing God's work and taking out the devil. I don't see what the problem is.
Absolutely.
Here. But people are all
the new testament.
So I don't know that much about his music, but I know he is a marketing genius. kudos to him.
For sure. And I mean, it's funny because, Zach, you probably remember this. Kiss did something similar with the blood in the comic book back in like the 80s. So like, it's not like what he's doing hasn't been done before. He's just doing it better, if I'm being honest with you.
He's doing it, well, by today's standards, he is going beyond where a lot of the devil music back in the day when it was just rock and roll was, it was bad. If you listen to rock and roll, oh my gosh. But Kiss has done it. A lot of other bands have done it. And he is going to the next level. And where it is in today's industry, yeah, he's doing it better because the industry has changed.
Yeah, for sure. Andrea, anything from you?
I 100% agree with what everyone just said. Marketing genius. For a while, he was posting on Twitter after the video for Montero came out of like, oh, they're going to take down my album. Make sure you go download it and stream it and everything. And I was like, all right, I'll go do that. Like, I fell for it. and it was amazing. And I'm with you, Eric. Like, when Old Town Road first came out, not only did I think it was going to be a one-hit wonder, I also hated it. Like, I was, like, the only person in my friend group that just did not like that song. And so when he started to come out with some of the stuff from Montero, I was pleasantly surprised. And that song in particular ended up being in, I think, my top 20 tracks for 2021. Love it. Love him. Love this journey for him. Can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Zach, you are up. You're going to give us some rock and roll, I think, correct?
That's my area of expertise. I've been in the radio industry for a couple decades. I've worked for Hot AC, CHR, Oldies Country, but I predominantly have been in a rock, classic rock format. So that's where, if I'm typically going to listen to something, it's going to be a rock or a classic rock because it's what I grew up with. It's what my parents listened to. So for me, it's what I choose to. But there's a lot of great music out there that you have all been bringing that I'm excited to go listen to. But let me start with my third album. An artist that we play on our station, he's been around for a very long time, Peter Frampton. This is his 18th studio. It's called Frampton Forgets the Words, which is clever, because it's all instrumental, so he doesn't have to sing at all. And it was released back in April this year, contains instrumental versions of some of his personal favorite songs, all from other artists. He had done an all blues album back in 2019. It was all blues covers. He also was doing a farewell tour, which luckily he got in 2019, just before the pandemic took off. And then 2020, he did an autobiography, Do You Feel Like I Do? And this album, Frampton Forgets the Word, it is a burst of work in response to him being diagnosed with inclusion body mitosis back in 2014. Now, if you don't know what inclusion body mitosis is, it's a inflammatory muscle disease that affects older adults. It is characterized by slowly progressing weakness in different parts of your body. A big part of it is right in your midline with the proximal muscles, and then the distal muscles, which would be your limbs, especially your fingers. Being a guitarist, once he was diagnosed, he knew he was living on borrowed time to do what he loves, which is to make music. So he did his farewell tour. That was it. No one's going to see him live again. And now he's just making music, whether it's new music or covers. He doesn't care. He's like any artist we talk about. He's doing what he loves to do. So he started this looking at all these different artists. And it was an album that is rock, but it also pays homage to the artists that he is covering. He's got early career collaborators and friends that are no longer with us. David Bowie, George Harrison, he covers them. He's got a big fondness and love for Motown. So he covers Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye. He loves the newer rock that goes sometimes a little bit harder than him. Roxy Music, Radiohead. He's also got some Alison Krauss in there and Lenny Kravitz. So he took a lot of not just his inspiration, but just music that he listens to. And he did amazing covers of it, making it his own, tributes to these artists that he loves, whether they came before him or after him. It's paying tribute and homage to them. And it's a great album, cover to cover. It's how many tracks is it? Now, you know, if I was prepared, I would have this 10 tracks and comes in at about 48 minutes.
It's great. I did not know any of that about his diagnosis. That's terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he was able to do this. I have so much respect for artists who are at a point where they're just like, I'm doing this for me, and I don't actually care if this mm-hmm. is commercially successful. I need to make this art, and especially given that information that he's dealing with this diagnosis, that's really powerful.
And that's just where he is in his life. He's best known for his Frampton Comes Alive back in 76. It's what all the classic rock stations play. You know, 13 minutes, Do You Feel Like We Do, you put that on, you walk down to the bathroom, you know, you're covered, you can take a break. He's a great guitarist, and he's just doing what he loves to do while he can still do it. And even an artist that I may not like anymore because they changed their music, I still respect them because it's their music. They can do what they want. It may not be what I want, and that's perfectly okay. They're doing what they want, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that completely. And I think that's one of those things that I've embraced as I've gotten older is it's not for me, but I appreciate that they're, you know, expressing themselves. Literally, mm-hmm. they're artists. That's what we call them. Art is what they're wanting to express. So has anybody else listened to this album? Andrea, by any chance?
I have not, but like Zach, I also grew up on classic rock oldies, Motown. So I'm very familiar with Peter Frampton just playing around the house as a kid. And I also didn't know about his diagnosis. So that's definitely heartbreaking to hear just as from a nostalgia fan factor. But I'm definitely going to go check out his stuff. Hopefully he's got more stuff in the vault that he'll release too.
Yeah, agreed. Gary and Jake, had either one of you heard the album or no?
No, I haven't, but I thank you for this discussion, for educating me.
You're welcome.
That's part of what we're here to do, right? Honestly, and I'm not even being flippant. Like, that's part of why I love doing these best of episodes is I had no idea about Ted Lasso until we did our best of 2020 TV, and then it blew up. And I was like, thank God we have panelists who actually have taste who tell me what's going on instead of the garbage I listen to and watch. So I'm always so glad that we have this kind of cultural exchange. With that being said, we are going to take a very quick break, and we're going to come back with round two of our top albums of 2021. So we'll be seeing you in a second.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Welcome back to our second round of our Best of 2021 music episode. It's back to the top of the round with Andrea. What's your second album?
My second album is Texas by Sleigh Bells. I love Sleigh Bells. And for a lot of people, if you say the name Sleigh Bells, they're like, who the fuck is Sleigh Bells? Yeah, people know their songs. They had a couple of big hits in like 2009, 2010. Like Crown on the Ground and Infinity Guitars and Real, you know, it's this crazy hyper pop punk with some trap and hip hop beats duo and lots of synth, and it's loud and it's bone shaking and it's amazing. And the lead singer, Alexis Krauss, she has this like punk vibe to her, and I just absolutely adore her. I want to be her when I grow up. But this album is, it feels like a return to form for them. Their previous two albums before this kind of got torn up in the presses because they pivoted a little bit from their original thrashy hyperpop sound to kind of a softer metal, more rock sound. And it wasn't bad. It just wasn't the Sleigh Bells sound that we had all grown to love. The album's super fast paced. It's 35 minutes long, which is the perfect length for a Sleigh Bells album. The first track, Sweet 75, Alexis is chanting, here we go, your legitimate rock and roll, which again is just another big fuck you to the presses who tore them apart in those previous albums. You know, they were like, this isn't the Sleigh Bells that we know and love. And she's like, okay, here you go. But you can tell that this is what they've been wanting to do the whole time too, is just to make music that they love and that they want to perform. I'm not sure how long the album was worked on, but it definitely feels like pandemic work with a lot of relentless optimism versus a more sardonically hopeful lyrics, like in the song I'm Not Down, where she sings, nobody cares when a line gets crossed. Nobody cares when a life gets lost and lives do get lost. We got to look out for each other, which, you know, the past couple of years have been tumultuous for everyone in however many different ways. And I just really loved that line from that song. The single track from the album, Locust Lace, is definitely one of my favorite songs. And looking at the Spotify streams of this album, it's just depressingly low. The song has around 960,000 streams compared to those big hits like Infinity Guitars and Crown on the Ground, which have like 11 million each. And in my opinion, this song should be right up there with those mega hits. The hook of the song, she sings, I feel like dynamite. I feel like dying tonight. And it's easily the most memorable line. And as someone that lives with bipolar disorder, I just like, I want this tattooed across my fucking face. Probably not my face, but I'm probably going to get it tattooed somewhere, cause I just really love that line so much. And another personal favorite is Rosary. The song is sonically just really interesting because we still have the thrashy hyper pop going on, but she's singing really angelically through most of it, except for the chorus where she sings, rip a rosary between your teeth if that's what it takes in your time of need, which again, 2 years, blah, 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 panorama. Sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And if that's grabbing a rosary and getting on your knees and praying, or if it's tearing apart a rosary, you know, whatever makes you happy in this day and age. And this album is just so iconically a Sleigh Bells TM album. If you fell in love with them in the 2010s and kind of fell off the bandwagon, this is going to be the album that kind of gets you back on. It's loud, it's fun. I'm going to go see them in February. Their tour is vaccine mandatory. So if you haven't had a chance to see them before and you want to have your literal shit rocked, go see them.
I listened to this album because of Andrea's recommendation, and it did literally rock my shit. It is so good. It is wild. Like, I was just like, I don't know what's happening. I've never been to a rave, but I can imagine listening to this to at a rave with like glow sticks or whatever, and I'd be like, this is fucking great. The lyrics are really good. The ones that you picked up in the I'm Not Down, especially, you were exactly, I got the exact, like, this is such a pandemic song. Like, nobody cares when we're losing lives, like, and we do lose lives. Like, it's really good stuff, and I loved it. I'd been familiar with them before, but this was really the first time I spent time delving into them, and I love that single too. It's crazy to me that it is so low on the Spotify listens, because it's a great song.
The whole album, to your point about the rave, I always like to describe Sleigh Bells as a band that whenever you listen to them, whatever song you're listening to, it feels like you just walked into the middle of a party and like it's been going on and it's still going to keep going on. Like, that's what it feels like to listen to Sleigh Bells for me.
Yeah, it's a really cool band, and I'm so glad that you nominated them. Has anybody else listened to this one?
No, but I feel like I need to go rave now, so.
Yes.
I don't, but I mean, I love getting my shit rocked just as much as Eric, so I'm down.
Zach, anything from you?
I have not listened to it yet. I have heard some songs by Sleigh Bells, and they always, for me, fell under kind of, I didn't know they were, I guess, noise pop, I guess is what they fall under. I always thought they were alternative, which I think is similar, but it definitely has a rock feel to the older Sleigh Bells. They're not that old, but older, I'll say. I want to go listen to this album. You sold me, Andrea.
Yay. Everyone go listen to it. It's half an hour long. Like, you have no excuse to not listen to it, really.
Exactly. All right. So I'm up with my second pick, which is There Will Be Tears by Vincent. I had never heard of Vincent prior to this album and the single that they had used, I guess, last year to promote Queer Eye. But apparently he was on some Fox reality competition I'd never heard of called The Four. Like, literally, I'd never heard that this was a thing. But you don't need to know any of that, because what you do need to know is that Vincent is amazing. And I think he's an essential new voice in pop music, especially for queer pop music. This is his debut full-length album, and it's just loaded with terrific songs. Higher features Alex Newell, who, by the way, where's my new Alex Newell album? I need that in my life. It is just full of soul-bursting joy. Get Away with Tegan and Sarah is more chill, but it's still like evocative and resonant. Hard to Forget is a spectacular post-breakup banger. And while it's technically not part of this album, you should also check out the wonderful Be Me, which, as I mentioned before, was used as the promo single for the most recent season of Queer Eye. And it's just uplifting. And that's the thing. This album is dealing with breakups and guys who aren't able to commit and feeling blue. But the overarching sentiment that I got with this when I listened to it is just hope and optimism. There's something about his voice that is just so uplifting. It's kind of got the best elements of R&B in terms of like the storytelling and the vocal timbre, but it's being presented in a much more pop-facing format. And for me, it worked so well. This is a very strong debut album from this artist, and I'm so excited to see what he does next. Has anyone else listened to this?
I have, Eric, and I've known of Vincent since their YouTube days before they were on The Four, which was a great show, and they did Creep on there, I think, as their like intro song, and they destroyed it, like knocked it out of the park. The album, yeah, I agree with you saying, like, his voice is just beautiful. It's like silky, and it has the variety of tracks on it. Yeah, I definitely think he's a keeper, and we need to see more of him in the future. And I'm glad that was your pick.
Yeah, it's just such a good album. And as I mentioned, it's like if you're queer and you're not listening to this album, I don't know what you're doing, because it is made for the queer community, right? It is, even the features on it are very, very LGBTQ. So anybody else listen to this one or no? If you haven't, that's fine.
I have not.
Nope.
No.
Well, now you have something to listen to. Speaking of which, though, Gary, it's your turn. What do you got for number two?
So my number two is this little lady named Cynthia Erivo. I'm sure, hopefully, y'all have heard of her. She is a Tony Award winner in this little thing called Color Purple. And she won for her vocals. Why this is my album, one of my albums, of 2021, is because this is her debut album. And I have also watched her journey when she was performing with Scott Allen, just doing like cameos and things like that. And just to see her blow up and also get her flowers finally, just warms my heart. This album for me, I think it's a mixture of like R&B, soul, pop. And for me, it shows her range. Vocal range, every track she's delivering. My favorite song is Mama, and it's the last track. So if you have not listened to the album, I would say this one you can also, from start to finish, it's great storytelling as well. But Mama is obviously about her mom, and it's just the vocals, it's just something about it so pure, and just it really, I think, shows the essence of who Cynthia Erivo is. So the album is called Chapter 1, Verse 1, or CH1, VS1. And I'm just beyond excited just to see where Cynthia takes off on this side of music. So I just wanted to make sure it was on everyone's radar. Please give her flowers.
And I'll say this, we'll be hearing a lot more from Miss Cynthia very soon, because she has been cast as Elphaba in the Wicked movie.
That's true.
Opposite Ariana Grande as, Galinda. My God, I have a total brain right there. As Galinda. And I think she's just going to explode.
Oh, she is.
And I agree. What was really wonderful about this album for me, I was kind of expecting it to be more Broadway, given her background, but it has such a wide variety of different type of songs on it. And yes. I knew her voice was going to be amazing. Of course it was, but I loved seeing all these different kind of shades to her as an artist. It was very exciting for me. Anybody have anything else to say about that one, or do we want to move on to Jake and ABBA?
The only thing I'd heard, she's going to be in Pinocchio, right? The movie?
Is she in Pinocchio too?
I think she's the fairy. There's a fairy in Pinocchio, right?
Yes, there is the blue fairy in Pinocchio.
Yes, I think that's who she's playing.
Oh, look at her. So she's going to have a very big year.
Yes, I'm excited. That's exciting for her.
Jake, do you want to take us on a voyage with ABBA?
Ugh, took the words right out of my mouth.
I know, everybody. I'm such a cheese ball, but it's ABBA. It goes with the territory.
No, absolutely. And what I love about ABBA, and I guess, you know, music in general, is that it is transcendent. I mean, everybody on a global scale knows ABBA from every generation, and that is because of their timeless hits, but also because of movies and the play Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia too. Also, how I got introduced to ABBA growing up, maybe Gary, you might remember, is with the A-Teens. There was a group of Swedish teenagers who came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, and did covers of ABBA, of different ABBA songs. And so that's how I got introduced to ABBA.
I was convinced they were actual clones of ABBA. I thought that there's some factory over in Sweden that they had Ace of Base and then the A-Teens.
Yeah, I think they all came out like an IKEA factory, you know, just like on a conveyor belt where they just put out like, you know, blonde haired pop stars one at a time.
You get free meatballs. You have to put them together yourself, but it's very affordable.
It really is. Very DIY. But speaking of, like, you know, avatars, they do have a live residency coming up in 2022 in London, where all of the four members of ABBA created their own different avatars so that they can live on tour forever, which means, you know, that they future generations will still have the same love and admiration for them, I hope, as we all do.
I'm sorry, I do need to interject because I think it is a missed opportunity to not call them avatars as opposed to avatars. And whoever's in charge of their marketing needs to get their shit together. Like, come on. But also, like, this is how the Matrix starts, folks, is holograms of ABBA. And I'm okay with it. You know, if I'm going to be turned into a human battery, give me Dancing Queen.
I'll take a chance on it. I was reading an interview that ABBA, like, a few years ago, said that they actually don't like the name of their group. So it is an acronym for the four members, Agathinia, Bjorn, Bjarni, and Fried. Anna Fried.
Yeah.
And fun fact, they did all, the two were couples that originally, and then they did, you know, split up in 1983, and that's when the band did split up. And they haven't released new music in 40 years, and that's why I was so excited when Voyage was announced, because there's never really been a comeback quite like this. And I think we were talking about an artist who comes out, like, you know, every 5 years with music. I mean, talk about, you know, four freaking decades. And what I was so incredibly happy with is that their sound was still very much ABBA, still very much incredible. And just they sounded like no time has passed, which was amazing, you know, for people who just had gone from singing in their, you know, 30s to their 70s. It is amazing that how ABBA-like they still sound. Some of my favorite tracks are I Still Have Faith in You, which is actually nominated for Record of the Year at the upcoming Grammys. It's their first Grammy nomination. I cried when I heard it. It's such a beautiful, powerful ballad. My second favorite song on the album is When You Danced With Me. It's kind of a reflection of kind of what ABBA has gone through. Is one of the lyrics is, you know, I miss the good old times when you danced with me, kind of reflecting on, you know, their journey back when they were a young band, you know, in Sweden and globally, you know, kind of to where they are now. And it's so nice that they chose to release this music, you know, in this year. I think we needed ABBA more than ever. At least I certainly did. I mean, I always need ABBA, but especially in this time. And I was just so, I could not have been happier with this record. It is one that I listened to from beginning to end.
And it's not a long album. There's only like 10 or 11 songs. And so, you know, like Andrew, what you were saying, it's just like an album that you really have no excuse, you know, not to listen to after this podcast, because if you don't, I'll hunt you down.
There you go. I will say this. When I first heard that they were releasing new music, I think I audibly gasped, because who saw that coming? Like, is that on anyone's 2021 bingo card? ABBA comes out of cold storage after 40 years and puts out new music. That's incredible.
And no, I think it was actually on my bingo card next to Nicki Minaj's Cousin's Balls.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, bingo. Congratulations. But I will say that when I first heard those first two singles, which were I Still Have Faith in You and Don't Let Me Down,
yes,
what I appreciated so much, you're correct, like those harmonies are exactly what they were, but they were not trying to pretend that they were still in their 30s. It's ABBA, but it's matured, and it's not mutton dressed as a lamb. Do you know what I mean? Which is something that
exactly.
I'm not going to name other pop stars that maybe have been accused of this, but I think we can make some accusations. But I loved how they weren't trying to be anything that they aren't. And it's mm-hmm. just lovely. It's just such a lovely sound. And I choked up a little. I watched the press conference when they were doing the reveal and everything. And we needed this. You're exactly right. We needed this. Did anybody else listen to this album this year or?
No.
Not this album. We play ABBA on the Light AC station that I also program, but that most of that is old, and we have a little bit of contemporary stuff, but we play the older original ABBA.
I think that your listeners, I don't know your listeners, but I would assume if they dig original ABBA, they would probably like Don't Let Me Down especially, which feels to me like a 70s song, but today.
Yeah, I really like Waterloo. I don't know. I just get that vibe. And, you know, after all these years, they're still refusing to surrender.
That's right. Exactly. Still facing our Waterloos. Zach, how about you? What's your second pick?
So my second pick, I am going to go with a band that I've been a fan of for a while. Dave Grohl's been a part of two bands, Nirvana originally, which I enjoyed. But once after everything happened with Kurt and they moved on to Foo Fighters, I was a big fan of that band. And this past year, right way back in February, they released Medicine at Midnight. It's their 10th studio. It was one of the albums that had to be pushed back. Originally, it was going to be coming out in 2020, but this little thing called the pandemic kind of screwed everything up for a lot of people. And it's slight shift on the style that they were putting out. They took their usual rock sound and they took elements of what Dave kind of describes as dance rock and pop. Writers have described it as an alternative rock album, a hard rock, a power pop. It's got a variety of different songs on it. The title track, Medicine at Midnight, it's an interesting thing I didn't know I needed in my life. Disco loops and acoustic guitar. I didn't know that was a combo that I needed, but it's a very decent song. Cloud Spotter, it incorporates a little bit of Lowrider with the cowbell.
Yes.
They dabble. Yeah, yes, you picked
I
up
was,
on that?
I did. I literally was going to mention, like, literally listen to that song. I was like, oh my God, it's kind of giving me Lowrider.
I thought Lowrider is so well known for the, you know, the cowbell in the song, but also the SNL skit. It's embedded in all of our brains. Another song that I like, No Son of Mine. Dave works in great vocals. They have gospel vocals. They have, I think, what can be described as video game sound effects that they sprinkle in there. It's a great album that I really enjoyed cover to cover. It sounds like Foo Fighters, but a little bit different take. And there is the upbeat, fast rock kind of dance pop, which you could hear in a club. But then there is also some good tracks that it's okay to just sit back and enjoy. Chasing Birds is a nice slow down. It's near the end of the album, but it's a nice, easy listen.
I think so. I listened to this album because you nominated it. I had not listened to it before, and I agree with everything you said. This is going to be the douchiest thing I will say, and hopefully ever on this podcast. But okay. It was a little bit like enjoying a nice, like, red wine, where you're like, "Oh, I'm getting notes of citrus. Oh, I'm getting notes of oak." You know, like that. That's the most pretentious thing I swear I'll ever say on this thing.
That's but a Wednesday night.
Like that. Like seriously. Like you could hear all these different really interesting influences in the different songs, and you mentioned the disco Loops, I don't know if you're aware of this, but they have a side project called the DGs where they do covers. Yes. And they released an entire album this year called Hail Satin. And it's great. It's like literally the Foo Fighters doing Bee Gees music. And it's awesome.
That's awesome. I did not know that. I want to check that one out now.
Oh, totally check it out. It's a blast. But like you could hear all these different genres. Like there's blues influences in this album too. I loved it. The Foo Fighters have been consistently good since the 90s. And I ask you, tell me another rock band specifically that has been consistently good for 30 years.
Currently, well, it just straight rock. I can't think of one. Dave Grohl, I think, is really the face of today's active rock. When you look at what rock is, the rock genre, you touched on this last year that you needed rock, from 2019 into 2020, and the pandemic messed a lot of that up, but Foo Fighters are consistent. They're just there. They are what they are, but they're not afraid to do something a little different and go over the line. Like I think they did with Medicine at Midnight. I think they went over the line a little bit outside their bubble, and I think it's a great album.
Yeah, I agree completely. Andrea, had you happened to listen to this one?
I did, and I love President of Rock and Roll, Dave Grohl, just as much as anyone else does in the Foo Fighters. They were one of my favorite bands for a very long time. I listened to this album back when it came out in February and didn't love it the first couple listens. And I kind of put it away and I was like, okay, that was a Foo Fighters album. But I do want to go back and listen to it now with this new perspective. And I just looked at it as another half hour long album. So again, I have no excuse to not revisit it. No Son of Mine was definitely one of the songs that stood out for me on that one.
Yeah, it's a great song. Gary and Jake, I'm going to guess this isn't your kind of wheelhouse, but did either of you happen to listen to it?
I have not.
I have not either. Shame on me.
Yes, and that's funny, Jake.
Because one of the lead single was called Shame Shame. So there you go. Dave Grohl knew this was coming.
Maybe I have.
It did. All right. With that, we're going to take another quick break and we're going to come right back with our final round of picks for the best albums of the year. We'll be right back.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We are back with the final round of our Best of 2021 music episode. Before we wrap things up, I want to ask our panel, where can people find you on social media? Andrea?
I'm available for cyberbullying at twitter.com. My handle is at Dre Soufflé.
Do not cyberbully my panelists. They are all lovely people. That's my job. Gary, how about you?
You can find me on Instagram at GaryMusicManJ or over at Twitter at Gigi Eureka.
Great. Jake, how about you?
You can slide into my DMs anytime on Instagram at JTaysu_ and on Twitter at Jake not from State Farm.
And Zach, how about yourself?
You can predominantly find me on Twitter. My handle is Zach Deuce at ZACK Deuce. Or if you say anything, if you throw a rock on Twitter and hashtag podcast, you'll hit me. I'm there.
And we're very grateful for that. And you can find me at Eric Resniak on all of the things. That's E-R-I-C-R-E, Z as in zebra, S as in snake, N as in Nancy, Y-A-K, definitely N as in Nancy. And make sure you're following at culture_debate on Twitter and at Great Pop Culture Debate on Instagram. So with that said, let's get into these final picks. Andrea, take it away.
My final pick for 2021 is Sour by Olivia Rodrigo. I have no idea who this chick is or where she came from. preliminary research says she's somehow a part of the High School Musical franchise, which is another thing that I'm also entirely unfamiliar with. But regardless, I love this album. It's her debut album. It was written and produced entirely during the great lockdown of 2020. There's a lot of heartbreak, but like the other albums that I've talked about, there's also a lot of fuck you elements to it. From the very little research that I've done on her, she seems like sort of like the antithesis of Billy, where she is definitely, she seems a lot more mild mannered and very like suburban, you know, Catholic school white girl, which is fine. And she's very young, and this album just screams 17-year-old heartbreak album. And honestly, I love it. The opening track, Brutal, is so punk rock. It really is. The guitar riff that opens it up sounds like it could have been written by Billy Corgan, who wrote obviously Zero by Smashing Pumpkins, and he did the guitar riff for Celebrity Skin by Hole, that opening guitar riff. And it sounds like it could have come right out of that catalog. In that song, she is just very angry about being young and 17. And we were all angry at being young and 17, but I can't imagine being 17 in the 2020s. It just seems terrible. It seems fucking terrible.
Absolutely.
but one of the lyrics in there, she says, "Where's my fucking teenage dream? If someone tells me one more time, enjoy your youth, I'm gonna scream." Yeah, we all hated people telling us that when we were kids. But again, I don't want to experience that in 2020 being 17. Sounds terrible. So the honestly, probably some of the worst years of my life was that age. And now she's having to do this, trying to finish high school, figuring out what to do afterwards, dating friends, et cetera, et cetera. It all sucks. The most teen girl song that we have on this album is Driver's License, which was very viral on TikTok for a while. It's a piano pop ballad, and it's literally about how her and her ex-boyfriend were so excited for her to get her driver's license, and then guess what? They broke up, and he wasn't there when she got her driver's license.
How dare he?
I know. And then it's just her singing sadly about how she still loves him and driving through his neighborhood like a creeper and crying. It's great. It's melodramatic. It's the song that you will sing along to and pretend that you're in a music video. It's so good. And then there's Good For You, which was the other viral hit that went around on TikTok. And this song, I feel like even at my age now, I do really enjoy it and feel some relatability to it, because it's sort of that feigned acceptance of moving on from a breakup, where you act like you don't care, but like you really do care. And it's also the embodiment of what too many women go through when they break up with their boyfriend or whatever, and the boyfriend moves on to someone else. And it's like, you put all of this work into the relationship, and you put all of this work into helping that person get their shit together, and then someone else gets to reap the benefits of all of that. All been there, done that. So she screams, good for you. You're doing great out there without me, like a damn sociopath. And she just like screams that at the top of her lungs with no instrumentals behind it, which like, it's not what a sociopath is, but it still embodies the feeling of like, how could you move on so easily while I'm stuck here in misery? And this whole album is just like an emo pop confessional about the tumultuous breakup that you go through when you're 17. She reminds me a lot of Billy in that way, where we really get to see this glimpse into the life of a young person in this day and age. And I really can't wait to see how she grows, a lot like Billy did between her two albums, because I feel like there's going to be a lot of revelations about loving herself and just being able to be happy on your own, and just that growth that comes with age and breakups, where you learn a lot about yourself and what you really want and need out of a relationship.
So I will confess something, that I did not get the Olivia Rodrigo thing, like, at all. I was like, I don't understand it. Like,
oh my.
Wait for it. This story has a happy ending. So I was like, so he dumped you. Get over it and move on. And then I was watching the Alanis Morissette documentary Jagged. And I was like, oh my God, Olivia Rodrigo is the Alanis Morissette of the 2020s. That's exactly.
And I almost made that comparison when I was writing my notes too. There's just so much anger, like in Jagged Little Pill. It's that same sort of relationship, post-relationship anger.
Yeah. And I was like, No, like, they need this. If I'm 17 years old, I fucking need this album. Like, it speaks to them in a way that Jagged spoke to me. And so I was like, no, I get it now. I totally get it now. Is it melodramatic? Yes, but 17-year-olds are melodramatic. That's the point. And they need to have this outlet. So now I've become a full-on celebrant. I love Good For You. I think it was written by Paramore, right?
There was a lawsuit, I think, eventually from Paramore, and it was decided that it was interpolated from one of the Paramore songs.
Well, I love it. I think it's a great song. I think she does great with it, and I have become a convert. So thank you. I think it's also, if we're being completely honest, probably the album of the year in terms of that and Montero are probably the two most significant pop culture albums this year, in my opinion. Jake, I believe this was also on your list, your short list.
It was. I love Olivia Rodrigo, and I am, you know, familiar with High School Musical starring this little known actor, Zac Efron. I love her, and this album was amazing. Andrew, you did an incredible job describing it for our listeners. I just think that exactly what you said, Eric, you hit the nail on the head. This is for, you know, 17-year-olds who have a lot of feels and are melodramatic, and, you know, she and her music are really a microcosm for people of her generation, and I think what they're feeling right now. And yeah, no, it's just such a fun album, and, you know, I thought I would get sick of it because it gets so much playtime on the radio, but if anything, I've come to love it more.
Nice. And Zach or Gary, have you listened to the album?
So I haven't listened to the album, but some of the singles, like, it was, you know, it was playing everywhere. And I literally was like, what in the gay tarnation is going on? All the gays were in love with it. And I was like, I don't get it. And then I listened to it and I was like, oh, I like it. So I was like reluctantly into it, but I think it's a good album.
Instead of one more thing, the last song on the album, I Hope You're Okay, like, made me bawl my eyes out. It's about a song, you know, and she's singing to, you know, a former class or someone she remembers from her childhood who had very conservative parents, who was, you know, gay, and the struggles that he dealt with, and, you know, wherever he is now, she doesn't know, but she hopes that he's okay, and she's just thinking about him, and it's such a beautiful song, and I love I love all the memes that came from it. You know, she's the new gay icon, and it's like there's all these memes of, like, you know, these like bears during Pride Week, and, like, there's this, like, little picture of, like, you know, the girl in the middle, and it's like, you know, Olivia Rodrigo meeting all of her new fans. But it's really, like, I don't know if you've seen those memes, but they're really good. And yeah, it is such a beautiful song, and I love her.
Zach, did you have any thoughts about this album or no?
I haven't listened to the album, but I didn't realize I had heard Olivia before because I went up and started looking while you were talking. Going, oh, I have heard this song. I haven't heard the album. She's got a beautiful voice, and as we have all needed coming of age movies, this is a coming of age album for a different generation. I'm not in the demo, but I can easily see why this has become so popular with a younger generation and everything that they have been going through over the past year, not just with the current world situation, but just where you are in life. If we can all go back, I don't want to tell you how old I am, but if I go back enough, I could be in their shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's important. Like, for me, the elder gays are like, oh God, another one. But no, but seriously, like, every generation needs that voice. And I think she is that voice for that generation. So that's pretty cool. I'm going to move on to my top album of the year. It's actually four different EPs from the same artist. The artist is Fickle Friends. They are an indie pop band out of the UK. I don't think they're that well known. But my favorite band, Dragonette, appears to have gone. They've broken up, and I was despondent when I found out about this because I was like, but you're my thing. And then Fickle Friends came in and slid right into that. They are a great fit for this. And by my count, they have released four EPs this year alone and just this week dropped a Christmas single. So I was like, come on, content. And all of it's good. Like, all of it's really, really good. This is electro dance pop. It's indie pop. And almost every single song they release is totally catchy and just gets me right in my sweet spot. Lead singer Natasha Schneider, she has this delivery that's both confident, but it's also cool. It's got great synths and instrumentation, and it's always on point. And just the hooks. If you say to me, what is the thing that you're looking for in a song? It's, I got to have a hook. And every one of these songs have got hooks. The verses have hooks. The choruses have mega hooks. And they get me. I've been following them for a few years with Swim and Glue. But on all these EPs, which include Weird Years Season 1, Weird Years Season 2, Alone, and Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. On all these EPs, they're giving me song after song after song that I love. Not in the Mood, Cosmic Coming of Age, Million, IRL, What a Time, Alone, Turns Me Bad. Like, literally, it goes on and on and on. But if you're looking for one song to be like, am I going to like this band? I would suggest looking up Pretty Great. It's on the EPs from this year. Technically, it was originally released in 2020, but it is just so catchy. And it seems this is what pop music in 2021 feels like for me. It's speaking to, like, the song What a Time is like, what a time to be alive. And literally, it's like, what is this fucked up world? But also, you have to go on with your regular life, right? To me, it all works, and it's really, really well done. I love this band. I think they have a full length coming out next year. Cannot wait to hear it. Has anyone else listened to them, or am I alone in this?
I think it's just you.
I'm alone. I'm alone. And in that song, like, the lyrics are literally like, everybody, everyone gonna shake their booties down in the basement tonight. Like, that is the type of pop that I want in my life, especially in 2021. So if you've not listened to Fickle Friends, please find them. They are tremendous. I'm going to move on to Gary, your final pick for 2021.
So my final pick to wrap up my R&B and soul is Giveon. His album is called When It's All Said and Done, Take Time. So he has an album that's, I believe it's When It's All Said and Done. So this is like kind of part two of it. This man's baritone vocals is just dripping all over this album. It is the sexiest, just like chill West Coasty vibe. And something about him, he's just like, yes. Gay Awakening, if I haven't had one already.
I think every morning you wake up to a Gay Awakening, Gary.
I think so. Gay Awakening and some bubbles. That's it. That's my MO. But what I love is that this is it's another album that you do listen to start to finish, because his storytelling, it weaves like this. His mom is like in an intro, and she's like talking to him about her concerns. Like, I think I heard gunshots and stuff like that. So it just kind of like weaves into like his upbringing, to like relationships, and then to him just really kind of being cocky in like a sexy way of just like saying, like, basically, I know I'm your best. So yeah, cocky, but maybe a little like, okay, settle down, but it's so sexy. What else did I love about this album? Oh, yeah, and it's romantic. And, like, he writes his music, so his, like, songwriting skills, his vocal abilities, and it's just something about it is very authentic. And he's also up for R&B Album of the Year, so he's going against my girl, Jasmine Sullivan. So I'm rooting for both of them. I'm rooting for anybody whose name is Jasmine Sullivan or Giveon at the Grammys. And the last thing is that he peaked at number 35 on the Billboard's 200. So if you have not checked out his album, vocals, male vocals, R&B, baritone voice, I would say give him a chance. It's beautiful. I mean, most of y'all probably heard the Heartbreak Anniversary is his single. So check out the album. It's worth it.
Thank you, Gary. I will say that that's one of the only ones on this list I haven't listened to yet, so I'm excited to listen to it now. It sounds like it's rich and, as you said, an awakening. I could use one of those.
Yes.
So thank you. Jake, your final album of the year.
My final album of the year is Love for Sale by Lady Gaga and Tony Bennett. And what I love about them is that this is their second album together, as we all know, their first jazz record, which also garnered a Grammy for Best Pop Vocal Album, Cheek to Cheek, was such a success that they chose to do another one together. And it's Tony Bennett's final album. And I think, as we can all agree, he is one of the most acclaimed voices of our singers alive. And it is exactly the kind of music that I think Lady Gaga loves to sing, even though we think of her as this over-the-top pop star, which she is, you know, going from doing Rain on Me and Poker Face, and then she can do Cheek to Cheek or a jazz record with Tony Bennett. I love how versatile she is, and I love that the two are musical companions. I mean, they could not be more different from each other, right? But I also think that's what we were speaking to earlier, how music is transcendent, and especially, you know, between these two, these singers, how the connection that they have, they're not just musical companions, they're genuinely friends. And I think their relationship and their closeness, really, you can tell in the music that they make. And this record is all Cole Porter songs, who is extremely, you know, a famous composer, doing everything from Anything Goes to Silk Stockings. It is just, I mean, everybody is familiar with the work that he's done. And they, one of my favorite songs on the album, not just the title track, is De Lovely. I go around the house singing it like every day, like, it's De Lovely. Lovely, it's delirious, it's delicious. And that's just like, you know, thinking about Taco Bell. But it is a perfect farewell for this legendary crooner. As it was, you know, his family released earlier this year, he is suffering from Alzheimer's. And this is his final album that he'll release, and is nominated for Album of the Year and Record of the Year for I Get a Kick Out of You. So I'm glad to see that he is getting that respect for, you know, his last release. And it's just, it's nice to see him go out on top. And to, you know, Lady Gaga did this amazing interview with Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes about their farewell performance at Radio City Music Hall. And she says, even though seeing, you know, the people that you love change, it's beautiful to see that, you know, you can still be incredible. And what was amazing is that Tony Bennett performed at Radio City Music Hall, his the set from Love for Sale. And he did not, and this is somebody who, you know, sometimes doesn't even know what day it is, but when he goes out on stage, he is a performer. And that is what's so amazing about music and just knowing who you are, is that even somebody with advanced Alzheimer's, music can transcend that, because it taps into more, you know, than just lyrics and melody. You think about where you were when you, you know, heard a song that you love, or where you were when you performed it, much like Tony. And so it all comes back to him, even in the midst of Alzheimer's. He can go up on there and sing an hour from the Great American Songbook and completely kill it. And I think that is just amazing to see how, you know, the power of music. And it, you know, it's definitely, you know, something that, that I was completely moved by. And I think it was a really amazing album. And me, I don't even listen to jazz that much. Like I said, I listen to contemporary pop. But I think, you know, regardless of what music that you listen to, you can still find room in your, you know, musical catalog to appreciate this great body of work.
Yeah, it's such a lovely album, Jake. I'm so glad you put it on this list, because it really is. It's lilting, and the thing that makes it so special is that relationship between the two of them. I can't remember if it's on this one or the previous jazz album they did together, but Goody Goody, is that on this one?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, the banter between the two of them is the most charming thing. And you can tell they have this really warm relationship, like it's genuine. And I love that. This album is so pure and just so sweet that I can't say enough good things about it. So thank you for bringing it up. I really appreciate that. We are going to move on. Zach, you're going to get the final word, our last pick of the year. What have you got for us?
All right. So this was a debut album, self-titled debut album for Mammoth, WVH. It's founded and fronted by Wolfgang Van Halen. It was released back in June. He is the son of the late guitarist Eddie Van Halen, and Wolfgang was also the bassist of Van Halen from 2006 to 2020. Initially, Mammoth was created as a solo project while he was still part of Van Halen prior to their disbandment. And following the death of his father back in 2020, he began to focus more on this product, where he performs everything, all the instruments. He's vocals, he's guitars, he's bass, he's drums, he's keyboards. It's incredible. He is a incredible guitarist. And I wasn't really sure where the idea for the album or really the band came from, where the name was. Apparently Eddie, his dad, the original band he was in was also called Mammoth, which when Wolfgang was growing up, he thought, quote, that is the coolest name. And when he grew up, he wanted to call his band that. So as he continued to grow, Eddie, his father, had
saw the talent that was continuing. And once he was able to start working on this, he started putting it together, doing demos. He presented it to his dad, and Eddie was immensely positive and gave his blessing of, yes, go ahead. I would be honored for you to take this name, because the original band that Eddie was in became Van Halen. So it wasn't that the band actually went off and there's other band members going, oh, hey, that's our band name. No, they're everybody else that was left in Van Halen. This album comes in at just over an hour, but it's an incredible album. You get incredible rock, heavy rock, hard rock, but you have some feeling, some emotions. The first single that was released back in 2020 is called Distance, and it was released as a tribute to his dad, who had passed away of a stroke in October of 2020. Eddie had been battling for years with lung cancer. Wolfgang later revealed that he had begun on this many, many years as a coping strategy. With his dad's health was declining, he knew that there would eventually be a time where he would lose his dad, his bandmate, and his best friend. And the lyrics, it's simple, but it's straight to the point. I'm so happy you found a place that's better for you than this rock we're living on. I'm so nervous, don't know my place, a life without you, I'm not ready to move on. And that's right near the end of the album. It's a very powerful song. There are some other songs that are a little bit slower and melodic, but that one is my favorite song. I'm all for a kick-ass rock song, but I am all for a medley or something that's so pure emotion, especially if it's for his dad. I mean, when Eddie died, an entire generation lost their guitar hero, and you know, and Wolfgang's just trying to get by.
Yeah, I will be honest with you. I did not listen to this album yet. It's the other one I hadn't gotten to. And you've just made me absolutely want to go download it, because I love Van Halen. I thought it was Mastodon when I first read the thing. I was like, oh, I know Mastodon. I'll go check that out. And now I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't realize it was Van Halen, like the son of Van Halen, who obviously Eddie Van Halen is amazing. And if you weren't alive in the 80s and you're not aware of his incredible guitar prowess, I'm sorry for you, because my God, there was nothing like it. And I've been reading and hearing that Wolfgang is very much cut from the same cloth as his father. So
he is.
Thank you. I will 100% check that out. Andrea, had you happened to listen to it? I know that, again, you enjoy rock.
I have not listened to it, but just listening to Zach read those lyrics, I was like getting choked up. And now I'm going to go listen to it later today, probably.
Yeah. So thank you so much for that. I love this when we are introducing people to new albums that they're like, yeah, I had never would have heard of this otherwise. So that's the point of these episodes. You all did an amazing job with that. Thank you very much. Those are our picks. Did you listen to any of them? Do you have your opinions? Is there something else we missed? This episode is just the beginning of the discussion. Let us know your favorites on social media and at greatpopculturedebate.com. A big thank you to our panelists. You guys picked a great diverse group of albums for people to check out, and a huge thank you to Zach. Tell people where they can find you one more time.
Pretty much Twitter. You can find me at Zach Deuce on there, and I'm always sharing whatever podcast I may be tolerated by, including this one.
Well, thank you very much for that. And you all better buckle up, because the Great Pop Culture Debate has plenty more for you in 2022. Come right back to greatpopculturedebate.com after the new year, as the polls for season 5 will be open for your votes. We're talking best HBO original series, best boy band, best 1990s sitcom, and best 1980s soundtrack, just to name a few. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you check out our other best of 2021 episodes devoted to TV and film. They'll be releasing the last week of 2021, so make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or Audible, and that you follow us on social media for all the latest news. And if you haven't supported us on Patreon, what are you waiting for? There's so many great perks, and we'd love to have you as part of our little podcast family. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and looking forward to a bigger and brighter 2022. And seriously, we mean it this time, universe. Thanks for now, and remember, everyone is entitled to the wrong opinion.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.